Red Lipstick, The Man in My Life. Wrote by Lakshmi Narayan Tripathi. Published in Penguin Books in 2017. Lakshmi, transgender rights activist, Hindi film actor, and Bharatanatyam dancer, is a celebrity and an LGBT icon. Founder of the NGO Astitva, which works towards the support and development of sexual minorities, she's the first transgender who went to the United Nations representing the Asia-Pacific sex workers. Lakshmi played a pivotal role in the recognition of Hijras as the third gender in India. Vishnu is Mohini and Mohini Vishnu. The book is dedicated to our gods and goddesses because they get it. First chapter, The Red Lipstick Monologue. When I was born, the doctor checked my genitals and pronounced me a boy. Who could foretell that a claim like that, a seemingly innocuous gesture, would mark me for life? When we are assigned as at birth, male or female, is our gender. And somewhere along the way, we human beings decided that gender would dictate our lives, steer us down certain paths, brand our behavior, and inform almost all our choices. From something as trivial as the color of your car, to bigger decisions such as choosing a partner for life. Nobody even seemed to realize that gender is nothing but an adamantine box. So, it is that people like me, who fall nowhere in this binary, or somewhere in between, or even live beyond, are considered misfits in society. We are termed abnormal. But as LGBT rights activist Ashok Rokavi told me all those years ago when a boy, myself, asked him what I like men's crotches. The world around us is abnormal, baby. You are normal. As I was growing up, in the eyes of the world and those of my own family, I never gravitated towards manly things. I love to draw and paint, twirly around and lovely, flowy fabric, wear makeup and jewelry. My absolute passion, however, was dance. In dancing, I was completely and utterly free. All of these meant, of course, that I was a feminine. But the problem was that I was feminine despite being a boy. So when I wore bangles, because they looked so good, red and shiny on my wrist, I would be told off by my father's friends. Everyone's reactions around me seemed to indicate that I was acting like a girl, so I felt like a girl too. I would often refer to myself as one, mehabiatiun, I would say, and immediately be reprimanded for doing that. Larkion jese karkat matkar, don't act like girls, I would be told. When I decided to grow my hair because long hair is beautiful, it really disturbed my father. He made sure I had it cut because ache ghar ke ladke aise nahi karte. Boys from good households do not behave this way. The word kept suggesting I was a girl, but my private parts indicated that I was a boy. And then there was the whole question of sexuality. I was attracted to boys. My first inklings and stirrings of lust came from noticing big, strong arms, the hint of a guy's mustache over his lips, billboards that advertised men's underwears, and I was puzzled. Was there a woman inside me who couldn't really express herself because of some last-minute mix-up that God did at the time of my birth? Back then, in the early 90s, the word gay simply meant happy. Until one day, I was told that, in fact, that was who I was. Directed to Ashok for advice, I remembered that day in Maheshwari Garden so well When seeing him and others like him and me around, I was overjoyed to have finally found an identity I could call mine, wholeheartedly. I was not Chaka, Mamu, God, or any of those terms hurled at me on a daily basis as abuses. I was gay. The world might still not like me for desiring someone of my own sex, but at least now, there was certainty. For the first time in my life, I could set aside the crippling confusion and say to the world, I am a gay man. The certainty did not last long. Now the world accepted me to behave in yet another way. Once again, I was confronted with parameters and boundaries. I could wear shirts and pants, but I had to look and act fancy. And if I felt like wearing lipstick and a sari, it would mean I was doing drag. I just liked the feel of the sari and the way it draped over my body. Does there really have to be more to it, I wonder? As a gay man, I was also always supposed to be cruising other gay men, to be on the lookout for sex almost constantly. How exhausting. Is that any way to live? And why is it all only about sex? I wonder about all this as I went on, on with my life, checking the boxes I was tagged under as a gay man and as a drag queen. But the question of my identity, that dialogue with myself, remained unanswered, unaddressed. Who am I when it's just me, alone in my room? Who am I for the world? Are these two selves different? Do they have to be? I am 37 today, and over the years, I don't know if I have reached the place closer to the answer. I don't know if I ever will. But if there is one identity I see through it, is the one that was created almost seamlessly. It is the Lakshmi the world demanded when I went out to make my voice heard to talk about the rights of transgender. The persona of Lakshmi, the activist that was formed as much by the world I was interacted with as by my own efforts. The supremely confident Lakshmi, who wears gorgeous saris, expensive makeup and perfume, who projects an image of absolute self-assurance, travels the length and breadth of the country and attends international conferences, gives speeches at queer pride parades, delivers TID talks, is interviewed by the likes of Guernica and Salman Rushdie. So many doors that were closed to me, that were firmly shut, open to this Lakshmi. The creation of this persona had played an incredibly important role in my story, in the journey of my life. I began to enjoy being this Lakshmi. And this Lakshmi got things done. So she is such much for the world as for me. If there is one role for me, the one big cause I know I'm meant for, the raison d'être of my existence, it is that of an activist. I firmly believe that even if you have the best laws, unless you change the mindset of people, nothing will change. And that is what true activism means to me. That is why I can never be a 9-5 activist. I don't understand that. I am and can only be a 24/7 activist. Which is why, whatever the circumstances in my personal life, in public I have to be that, the Lakshmi. Once I step out of my personal space, I cannot be merely myself. I have to be in the garb of that strong activist Lakshmi because inadvertently I have come to represent a community of millions of people in this country. People look up to me and I have to fulfill the responsibilities of the role that has been given to me. No matter what I'm dealing with in my personal life, in public, I always go as Lakshmi, the strong, unbreakable activist nobody can mess with. In fact, if I'm going through a difficult time personally, I can't even stronger when I don the persona. When I'm completely alone, all by myself, I'm not sure what feeling I am most comfortable with. Who I feel is completely and only me. I asked myself many questions. Who am I? What I am? Then later I think, fuck it, I am Lakshmi. That's my persona. There is no room for doubt. When Rama was leaving Ayodhya to begin his 13-year exile in the forest, such was his popularity, so great the devotion of his people towards him, that the entire kingdom followed him to the outskirts of the city. Touched by his support, Rama turned around and told his subjects, I request all the men and women gathered here who truly love me to please return to their homes. Once the duration of my exile is complete, I shall be back with you. At the completion of Vika's exile, when Rama turned back, he saw that there were several people still waiting at the same spot on the outskirts of Ayodhya, where he did bid them farewell all those years ago. These were the Ijras, my brethren, those who did not return to their homes, since Rama had implored only the men and women to do so, and they were neither. Overwhelmed by their dedication, Rama granted them and future generation of Ijras a boon. We would have the power to grant both blessing and curses to men and women, which would always come true. When Ijras were patronized and indulged by royalty, they were not only visible but respected. It is the history and tradition of the Ijra culture, rich, strong, textured in our country, that I found myself most drawn to. A tradition in which even the mighty macho warrior Arjuna could don the garb and identity of a woman and become Brihannala effortlessly. A culture that offers us characters such as Shikhandi, the transgender who managed to throw the invincible Bhishma, where the ultimate male god was Linga unmarried girls worship, praying and observing fast for strong, able-bodied men as their husbands, also acknowledges his feminine self and even embraces it literally. A history that speaks of Ijras in eminent positions as political advisors to kings, administrators, generals, and guardians of harems. I embraced the identity of Ijras deliberately. It was a conscious choice I made. Many understood. Why, after all, would a male child belonging to an affluent upbringing Brahmin family initiate himself into a cult, a tradition, a section of society that's much reviled by the mainstream? Why, indeed? It is seldom by choice that the most Ijras are Ijras. It is in fact the lack of education opportunities that forces many to find refuge in the Ijras word. A lack that I, by the grants of God and my parents, never faced. So why would I, a privileged boy, become a Ijra? I was barely 20 when I met Lawrence Francis, aka Sabina, back in 1998. She was the first Ijra I met and because close to. I used to work as a model coordinator in those days, and Sabina was the brother of a friend who worked as a model. Until then, I was like any other person, frightened and somewhat repulsed by Ijras. I met Sabina at Chhatrapati Shivaji Terminus station and choked her into going with me to Café Monegar for a bite and a chat. I asked her many questions and learned a lot about Ijras in the process, the history, rituals, lifestyles, source of income, the concept of gharanas, how your guru is like your parent, you are the chela, and it becomes a family. A few days later, I went to Baichulla, where the head of Sabina's Lashkar Gharana, Lata Naik, held court. Nervous and unsure, I finally gathered the courage to ask those assembled there, I want to become a chela. How much is the fee? To my surprise, they all burst out laughing. Lata Guru, who went on to become my guru, said, there is no fee, child. If you want to become my chela, come. My initiation ceremony, the rite, followed soon after. I was given two green saris, which are known as Jogjanam saris, signifying the inculcation into a new way of life, and crowned with a community dupatta. Whenever I hear the term transgender, which we hear so often these days, I always feel that implies transcending gender. Identifying as transgender, I connect with being Idra the most. The word Ij refers to a holy soul, and the body in which it resides is Idra. Hence, they say the soul is Idra. As Idra, I can access both states of being, and I can also go beyond. In my strongest moments, I feel what a man feels, the power games that they like to play. And when I'm shining in my femininity, driving men crazy, I feel more like a woman than even the most womanly of women one could imagine, like Cleopatra or Amrao Jan, both ultimate symbols of femininity. I would really question things at one point. What is about me that attracts men? I would wonder. These straight, patriarchal men. I'm not a woman. I am feminine. But I'm not a woman biologically. So what are these men about? So many men who've called me mother or sister have turned to me on an evening when they were drunk. Or when they thought I was drunk and have wanted to sleep with me. But I don't need motherfuckers or sister fuckers in my life. Get the hell out of here, I would respond. They were ready to sacrifice everything to be in bed with me, even our relationship. I wonder then how that would happen. All these men were, in the eyes of the world and their own, heterosexual. And then I realized that the notion of heterosexual is, in itself, questionable. If you think about it, a woman is complete. She is XX and therefore complete. It is the man who is XY and hence as the woman in him. This manliness, then, is just a show, nothing but a convenient construct. A pretense to keep patriarchy alive, to keep women tamed. I am fortunate to be able to traverse through both genders as well. It is why I understand patriarchy inside out and why I can empathize with the things women do and how they think, act, and behave. Being a woman is so beautiful, though. If I could always stay in that state of being, if I had that choice, I probably would. Again, I'm not alone in this. Our heritage is full of stories that tell us how being a woman is a preferred state of being and existence. Take, for instance, the history of King Bhangshvana, recounted in the Mahabharata, who lived his life both as a man and as a woman, and who, when faced with the ultimate choice, opted to be a woman. And this was a king. There is also that unmistakable element of misery about a woman, which is so alluring, which everyone wants and desires, and something that men can never experience. Tera charitra swamyam brahmana hi samajpaye, they say. The creator himself could not fathom womanhood and the woman's character.